Sprint cars, super late models, thunder cars, modifies, World of Outlaws, Arkham. It's all here.
Welcome to Race Time Radio. Covering dirt to asphalt.
On races, fame, short tracks.
All the way to the high banked oval.
This is Race Time Radio.
Come on now, dig.
Your host, live from the Racetime Radio Studio, it's Smokin' Joe Chisholm.
Excellent, buddy, excellent.
And there we go, everybody, and welcome to Racetime Radio. Look at that, all the wires working once again. Off last week, but we're back. We're back, and we're back full tilt, ready to go tonight here on Racetime Radio. I'm Joe Chisholm, along with Junior, right here in the studio. What's going on there, big guy?
Hey, I'm getting really tired of TikTok and virtual racing.
Yeah.
I want real racing back, but man, are we ever lucky to have iRacing.
No kidding.
We got to kick back today and watch a heck of a race from Talladega, and man, it was a lot of fun to watch.
Landon Castle just about did it.
He's an amazing plate racer.
He is.
He's
a good iRacer, too.
He is. Yeah, no, he's been doing iRacing for a long time, but arguably, and I've said it, numerous times on this program since they started doing, the Pro Invitational Series, that really Daytona and Talladega are going to be the two places that are the most realistic, for the drivers. And the guys who are good at plate racing were good at plate racing on today's simulation.
Second for Corey LaJoie.
Yeah, definitely.
Second today.
Yeah, did a great job. Had the thing rolling pretty good. But you look at the drafting and everything that comes into play in real life, the blocking, the aggression. If you wreck in at Daytona or Talladega in real life, you're out of it. But you have to be aggressive, and you have to take the spot away from your competitor. You got to stop the run from happening. You got to protect your track position. So, you can't simulate the types of defensive driving that you can on a short track.
Bump drafting doesn't work the same either. By the look of what I seen today, doesn't look like the bump draft is as controllable or as effective.
I would agree with that. It's the style of car too. The Xfinity cars, on iRacing bump draft a lot better than the Cup cars do,
and
that's the same way in real life.
Right? Yeah, the guys can't feel it.
Yeah,
so.
You definitely can't feel it. It's all off of eyesight. But still, it reacts very similar because they can control the air. That happens in the game, and the side draft isn't as valuable in iRacing or valuable at all. But which really, is a big part of plate racing today. But when you look at the model that iRacing has, the feeling that you get, obviously I've never raced on Daytona or Talladega, but I've talked to lots of people who have, and they say that it's very, very legit, it's very similar. You can feel it. And really, plate racing is a place where you can't really feel what the car is doing anyways.
Right.
Like the car is relatively glued to the racetrack.
It's wide open.
It's wide open. It's a place where your butt doesn't drive the car, your head does.
Yeah.
Where on a road course, your butt does all the driving. The actual G-forces that your body, feels does the driving for you. Same with short track racing. Same with mile and a half style racing.
Right.
Where plate racing does not have that. Plate racing, you hold her wide open and it's a thinking man's game. So obviously you have certain moments throughout a race at Daytona or Talladega in real life where you need to still have that feeling underneath you.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are far less valuable than understanding the draft, understanding what the competitor is going to do, understanding what's happening around you. And that's why today's race, was so realistic. We got a chance to see some really cool racing today. And it was a lot of fun to watch. It was cool. It was a lot of fun.
I had some fun through the week on timscorner.ca. Tim has been hosting a pile of races out in the Maritimes, out on the East Coast side, working with Mike James and Paul Strickland Jr., I believe, is another guy that was on there. Dylan Langell. We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. Friday night's race, I lost my connection, so I ended up dropping out. But it's a lot of fun. These guys are at least getting something to do. Danny Chisholm has been just tearing it up. He's won two of the big I races so far. Good for him. And it's been rolling along real good.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of fun at iRacing.
There's going to be Mike James is working on one now for Eastbound International Speedway out in Newfoundland.
Yep.
And getting the Eastbound drivers hooked up on iRacing.
For sure.
I know Phil Fowler. I follow Phil. And going by some of his comments, he said he can't wait to get back to the real deal. This iRacing thing that he's just getting set up on. He said, I'm spending as much money, if not more, on this deal, getting things set up.
Well,
so.
you do, for sure. And you know, it can get out of hand real quick. You look at some of these simulators that are out there, and, you know, the triple monitor, you know, with the even without the motions, but with the actuators that actually, you know, feel like actual pedals.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, I've seen a couple rigs where they actually use master cylinders from, you know, like Tilton master cylinders or Wilwood master cylinders, where it actually feels like a brake pedal, and then a normal clutch with a throttle, or a normal throttle with a throttle return spring,
with a spring,
you know, and there's lots of tuning that can be done there to give you the feel of what you look for in a car, and then as well in the steering, you know, there's the base model Logitech. Is very arcadey. It feels like an arcade game,
yeah.
You know. Like,
yeah, yeah.
But there's certain motors, I guess you could say, that are out there that are wheel simulators that actually give you, you know, the actual resistance that it feels like to turn the wheels, and that's, you know, when you start getting into that type of setup, my goodness, you can spend $10,000-$15,000 pretty quick just getting comfortable equipment. Or you know, you can get into it for $350 with an arcadey style. You just need to, you just need to gauge and gain the feeling of that. But man, when you look at you know, the market of simulation programs and or not programs, but simulation rigs and stuff right now, holy heck, is there ever a big market for it? Every driver, you know, from four cylinder to cup wants to get a setup.
Yeah.
Now, whoever didn't have it wants to have it now.
He's getting into it now. APC series here in Ontario has been also doing a lot of iRacing.
Yep.
Guys are getting good at it. Dale Shaw ended up winning on Thursday night.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Caden Lapcevich, of course, went two in a row there.
Yep.
Dale Shaw's been running up front every single time. Trayton Lapcevich has been running up front. A little bit of controversy at the end of that one.
Yeah, well,
Dale Shaw ended up getting into to Trayton, and Dale ended up taking the win. But,
just like the real deal,
just
is
like
it?
The real deal. There was a little bit of fireworks that happened afterwards, and you know, definitely a you know, it happens. It's short track racing, and you know, there's a lot of eyeballs on this stuff right now. It's not like you're just playing around on a Friday night. It's,
right.
You know, it's something that, you know, people are the competition level in these series. You know, you look at the Speed 51 series that they've got fired up. You know, you're seeing some of the biggest names in super late model racing, you know, it, battling it out. And really, every time that these guys hit the racetrack, it doesn't matter if they're racing for $100,000 to win or a popsicle stick, they want to win. They want to beat everybody.
That's
the reason why you're a winning race car driver, is because you have that mentality of you want to win. So I find it comical to see the amount of effort that these teams are putting into it. It's pretty cool.
Let me tell you who we got coming on the show tonight. Of course, we're on the air here for the next 2 hours. Just shy of 2 hours now. We have Gary Elliott, driver of the Quaker State number 36, out in the Maritimes now. Used to be a long time here in Ontario, over 50 years of racing here in Ontario. He's now set up out in Truro, Nova Scotia, and he'll be in the Parts for Trucks Maritime Pro Stock Tour this year, providing this virus gets out of here and gets things fired up. But Gary Elliott in that 36 Quaker State machine is going to join us here tonight. We'll get an update on everything that's happening out in Gary's shop. Of course, last fall, you'll remember, if you're a regular listener here to Racetime, Gary did make the big move from Ontario out to Nova Scotia. He sold all of his equipment here in Ontario, went out east, and refired everything. And I mean everything. Re-racked it. He's got a whale of a piece, and it is ready to go by the look of his Facebook page. So we got Gary coming on tonight. We'll also go into Northern Ontario, and we'll check in with Anthony Leake. He is with Lake of the Woods Speedway. That is right around Kenora, Ontario. Been watching the Facebook page there. Looks like things are really starting to come together for that dirt track. We'll check in with Anthony tonight. We'll also hear from a real good friend of ours for our live race time broadcast from the East Coast of Canada. Mr. Brad Mann is going to join us. We call him Old Seven-Time. He's a seven-time champion out in the Maritimes. He's from New Brunswick. And Big Brad Mann is going to drop on in, and we'll check in with Brad. We haven't checked in with him all winter, so we'll see how he's making out. And then to round off tonight's show, I thought it'd be a good idea, Junior, to check back in with a good friend of Racetime Radio. He drives the number 98 Champion Thor Sport truck in the NASCAR Gander Truck Series. Mr. Grant Enfinger from Alabama is going to bam his way in here tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. His hometown's Alabama, but he lives in North Carolina now.
Well, yeah.
He's always an Alabama boy, though.
Yeah.
After you leave Alabama, you're still in Alabama.
I would think.
That's the way it works.
And we're going to get a Wilbur update.
Yes.
He's got a pet named Wilbur. And
Wilbur the pig.
Every now and then, I've seen some pictures with Wilbur with a cowboy hat on. So, quite a character. You got to follow Grant Enfinger along on Twitter. It's a gas. He's got a lot of good tips there, too.
Now, he's been with the iRacing program a little bit.
Oh, has he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's been playing around a little bit, but he's got a lot more pressure washing pitchers than he does iRacing pitchers. So we're going to have to catch up on what he's doing to fill the time in.
Well, I seen one tweet that he put out, and it was some helpful hints when you're filling up your car at a service station. Don't forget to put a glove on.
That was part of all the Ford drivers. Ford drivers had a different tip, for keeping the virus away from your family. And basically every Ford driver, did a quick video on whether it be wash your hands or sanitize this or sanitize that. It was a pretty cool campaign that they did. Hey, while we're on the topic of manufacturers, did you see the video that Toyota Racing Development put out where all the drivers did one lap, but audio?
Nope.
So they actually made like car sounds with their mouth and steering.
Oh, really?
And they went through each driver. I urge everybody to go check it out. It's on Toyota Racing Development. I retweeted it, but we can retweet it on the RTR. But it's comical.
Is
because
it?
there's quite a few drivers in there. There's Harrison Burton, of course, the driver of the 16, Austin Hill. And then Brittany Zamora, and there's a bunch of the up and coming guys like Zane Smith and Chandler Smith, and then a couple of the other guys. But tell me which one sounds faster. There's only two that sound real good.
Hey,
and Austin Hill and Harrison Burton got it on lock. They can, they got the Police Academy audio sound effects down pat.
Toyota has a real stout lineup, don't they, of young talent that's making its way through?
Really the only.
Yeah.
If you look at, Toyota Racing Development has taken it to a whole new level from, the grassroots level of midget racing all the way to Cup. They've got a full driver development program.
Yeah.
Ford and Chevrolet, they have a couple of development guys.
Yeah.
Do not have a pipeline like what Toyota does.
No. Invest in the future.
And Toyota has done that. They've done that since day one.
Yeah.
They've been heavily involved in the truck series on the performance side and ARCA and, of course, all the way up into Cup. But, man, when you look at the development process that they're investing in – they are grooming, you know, the next top names in the sport.
Yeah. Pretty cool stuff. We're going to hit this break, Junior, and when we come back, we're going to have that 36 Quaker State Chevrolet of Gary Elliott. Well, we're not going to have the car, but we're going to have the man with us here, the Iron Man. We're going to have him on the show next. Stay with us. We will be back.
This is Randy Hooker, owner of the Country View Golf Course, number 38 Chevrolet, and you're listening to Race Time Radio.
You're listening to Canada Talks on Sirius XM, channel 167.
Racetime Radio is brought to you by Atlantic Tilt Load, specialist in the transportation of industrial equipment across Canada and the U.S. Also by the Quality Inn Halifax Airport, the official stay of Racetime Radio in Nova Scotia.
Mad Dog Sports Radio is opinionated, passionate sports talk with a bite from the hijinks of the morning men.
I bet your parents do too. They go big bulk shopping.
Hey, so
I got 50 jars of dunk sauce.
We don't even eat dunk sauce.
But I got a good deal.
To the insight of Adam Schein.
Bill Belichick is the best coach in the history of sports.
Not NFL.
Sports.
And the animated energy of the Mad Dog himself,
Mad Dog.
Christopher Russo.
It's the channel to talk about your favorite sports team. Mad Dog Sports Radio, channel 82, or anytime on the SiriusXM app.
Cheap Trick guitarist Rick Nielsen on Canada Talks.
The 17 albums of all different stuff, and we've never stopped touring. We never expected to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We never expected something for nothing. You know, we spent our own money making our records, too. You know, and we did it, and we listened to people.
Don't miss a second. Canada Talks, SiriusXM Channel 167, and on demand with the SiriusXM app.
Broadcasting live from the track.
We're here to get trophies.
Never give up, baby.
SiriusXM NASCAR Radio Channel 90 is your home for all things NASCAR.
The yellow lights come on. And
everything's happening so fast.
Every race.
Hard contact into the safer barrier.
Exclusive interviews.
This is more than just a job. We don't get caught up in being famous.
The only broadcasting outlet in the world delivering NASCAR 24/7, 365.
Thank you. You are the man.
SiriusXM NASCAR Radio.
Channel 90.
If you're a Springsteen fan, you just found the promised land.
Hey,
hear rare interviews and performances. Concerts.
Is there anybody alive out there?
Celebrity guest DJs.
This is Rob Lowe.
Hey, baby, it's Little Steven here.
And more exclusives when listening to Bruce Springsteen's channel.
Welcome, Bruce Springsteen, to E Street Radio, your home away from home.
Great to be here.
E Street Radio, SiriusXM Channel 20.
Race Time Radio to go.
Streaming live or on demand.
Grab the free app
at racetimeradio.com.
We're back with you live tonight on racetimeradio.com, of course on SiriusXM channel 167 on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. And then how about the Performance Motorsport Network.com throughout the course of the week, or Gearhead Country Radio, or 98.9 XFM in Antigonish, Nova Scotia. You can always check us out on that channel as well. And if you want to listen on demand, you can do that. Just get to racetimeradio.com and have a click right on the actual show link there, or go to iTunes and search Racetime Radio. And don't forget to hit like and subscribe, and you'll never miss RTR again. And that'll be a good thing. We'd love to have you aboard. Let's get back to the hotline, shall we? And let's welcome in the Iron Man, not from Ontario anymore. He's out in Nova Scotia.
Well, he's from Ontario.
Well, he's from, but
He's from Ontario. He'll always be from Ontario.
He's from Nova Scotia. Now, let's bring in the Iron Man, Gary Elliott. What's going on there, Gary? How you doing?
I'm doing really good, thank you. And thanks for having me on your show. And thank you for the Chicago entry. I like that Chicago, that band that was playing the intro. And technically, I was born in Nova Scotia.
Ah, there you go.
I was three, so I'm actually from Nova Scotia and was raised in Ontario.
Well, you'll always be from Ontario for me, Gary.
Yeah, I know. I pretty well. I never started going to school until I was in Ontario, so everything I learned kids from there.
Well, I'll tell you what, Gary, we're starting to miss you here already, and we haven't even hit the racetrack yet, but you've been one busy cat out there in Nova Scotia.
Well, I'm really glad that I have. When I moved here in October, right after, actually 2 days after Autumn Colors, I delivered both my race cars to the Wilson family, and then 1 week before, and then the one right after Autumn Colors, and moved down here, and then I just went crazy on this great big garage. My kids, David and Shirley, they bought this house down here, and it's mine until as long as I live, and I think that's going to be about another 45 years, because I plan to race for another 20.
Ah, that a boy.
So, yeah, you know what? I'm really happy here. This is a really beautiful place. I've got everything up. I can't believe, like, people ask me, why are you keeping all this stuff? Like, you've kept stuff for years. Well, now I got it all up, so it's really nice. It's quite the man cave, and I got this beautiful car that I bought from Cole Butcher sitting in the shop, all lettered up, ready to go. And I'm doing really good. Pretty excited.
That race car, too, the number 53 car that you had purchased, that's got some history to it as well. It's not an old car by any stretch. It is fairly new, and it's got some winning in it.
Listen, when I came down here in 2017 to race the, 2017, I believe it was, when I came down to race at the IWK 250, that car was brand new then. So it's really a nice car. It's I look at it, and there's stuff that I haven't really seen before, because it's got all the best stuff, and I'm really thankful that I have it. And I remember, Joe, the last time we talked back in November, early December, you were mentioning about the paint, the red paint. So I already knew when I bought that car, it was all red inside and chassis. So I'd asked Cole if he would strip it all down and get it sandblasted and powder coated. So he did. And I paid him, but it was still a lot of work, and he did it all.
That's
and then,
cool.
Oh, yeah, the car looks really good. Probably a lot of people think it might be the best car I've ever had, but you know what? I mean, you could have a beautiful-looking blue car, red car, green car, so many beautiful-looking race cars, but I'm really happy with how this turned out.
It's a gorgeous race car, and I will urge everybody. We've got a photo up on the Racetime Radio website, but if you go take a look at it, I know a photo never does a Gary Elliott car justice. That is the number one thing that I'm going to drive home here, is that a photo never does a Gary Elliott car justice, but you can take a look at it on the website, because that's the only way you can look at it right now, but definitely you guys did a great job on that. Great to see Quaker State back on board, obviously still on board, the longest running partnership in Canadian motorsports history, really. It's definitely it's got to feel cool. Now I do got to ask, obviously transitioning in to a new series, you've taken part in it, you've raced, in the IWK 250 before, so you're not a completely green behind the ears when it comes time for the Parts for Trucks tour, but now being out there, being in the heart of it, being close to the action, what are the differences, Gary, between the Parts for Trucks tour guys and the staff and how everything comes together versus what you're used to here in Ontario? What's the differences between the two?
Well,
so
I would
far,
think the first
obviously.
Thing, yeah. First of all, like I've raced with these guys before, twice in 2016 and 17, and I got to meet quite a few of them. I met the 29 team of Greg Proud, and I met his crew chief Blake. And I met some other people, Dylan Blankhorn. I met the Butcher family when they were unloading at Walmart. And I was doing a show there, and they were unloading their cars. That's when I first met them. And but I would think maybe that, like, the APC series and this series, it would be really good if they met somewhere halfway and had their top 15 in each series have a race somewhere, like, because the difference, and one of the key differences is when I pull into the pits with this series, there's got to be 12 cars with stacker tractor trailers. Stacker, like, I mean, there's a lot of, and all these cars, most of them, not all of them, but a lot of them are new. And then there's a lot that are, a few years old. But you know what? Nova Scotia, people of Nova Scotia, and I never had that, never lost that attitude when I when I moved as a kid. But they really have a diehard. They care about stuff. I mean, they care about if they're going to race, they're going to race. There's none of them they're not going to race. So when you're racing against them, it doesn't matter if their car is 2 years old or 10 years old. They're going there to race. So, and they got some really nice looking cars. And Cole Butcher, like, I can't believe that kid is like, he's very smart, really good, works hard, just concentrate on getting his car done. So, and I think there's a lot of teams like that. They have really good teams here. So they're much like APC. I don't know that the cars are a whole lot different than the best APC cars. I would think they're really close. It just seems like I see a lot more expensive equipment here in the Maritimes, and I wouldn't have expected that when I came down here. I wouldn't have thought that. They also got a tremendous history. Junior Hanley was born here. Jim Hallahan is here from here. And there's many other ones. Frank Fraser, Rolly McDonald, who have all raced in Ontario against Zardo and Hanley and all the best up there. So this has really got a huge racing history in Nova Scotia.
Absolutely. And that was one thing that jumped off the page, you know, when I went to Nova Scotia for the first time, was, you know, the caliber of equipment and not just the, like, you can tell when you're at a big short track event, you know, you see 10 or 15 or 20 haulers that are pulled by a transport truck, you know, like,
yeah.
When you've got that type of equipment rolling into a racetrack, you mean business. And when I went there, you know, obviously over the time now, I've kind of taken, and you and I, Dad, have chatted about this before, but the amount of support for the local racer,
yeah,
in the Maritimes is amazing. It's incredible. The businesses are no different in size,
right?
But the support,
anything, smaller.
Exactly. If anything, they've got a smaller base to draw from,
right?
But the one thing that stands out to me, that is the big difference between Ontario, really the rest of Canada and the Maritimes, when it comes time for motorsports. And Quebec has kind of fallen into this exact same realm now, but it's new coming out of Quebec. Down in the States, Texas has got their own economy, right? Everybody says there's the American economy and then there's the Texas economy. People from Texas support Texas.
Right.
And in the Maritimes, people, like, if you're in the Maritimes, everybody in the Maritimes supports the Maritimes.
Yes.
And and in Ontario, it's not that way. And it hasn't been that way for quite some time. Quebec, like I was just mentioning, is exactly like that.
Hmm.
If you're from Quebec, it's now, it's becoming easier for, Quebec drivers to generate partnerships and sponsors and all of those things. Now, obviously, Gary, you don't need to necessarily, it's not that you need to work on the sponsorship side, but Ontario is a place that's a place that needs improvement in here in Ontario is just,
well,
the support aspect. Everybody can take a look at what the Maritimes do, and my goodness, when everybody pulls on the rope in the same direction, the sponsors fly.
Well, I'd like to add to what you said about the Maritimes as well, and I love Ontario, and I have a lot of really good friends there, and I have a bunch of guys that are going to be helping me when I go back up, crew members that helped me before, because I plan to run the full tour, or as much as we can get in it, and then run a bunch of races in Ontario in the fall. But when I came here, like, one of the things I had to convince and wanted to share with Quaker State is that I'm going to be able to do as much down here as I did in Ontario. And you know that my average races per night for the last 51 years is 25. I average a little over 25 nights a year. So this series was only 12. So one of the things that concerned my sponsors, namely Quaker State, was that would I get the same number of people that would I be able to see, like, racing 25 times and plus doing another 10 or 12 shows, would I still get the same number of people seeing me? How many people are in the seats? So when I came down here, I did a interview with the track series promoter, the one who runs the series, and I guessed around 25,000 to 30,000 people that would see me in Ontario for the 25 nights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some nights were big shows, like the last one of the year, that one, Autumn Colors, is huge, and, you know, some of the races at other tracks are quite full. But so down here,
there goes Buttons. I heard
yeah,
Buttons
corrected me already.
Yeah,
down here, they get 50,000. So figure 50,000 people in a 980,000 total number of people in Nova Scotia compared to 14 million in Ontario. So this place really does love racing.
It does, and the numbers justify it.
Oh, I'm going to gain more more people are going to see me race here than would see me in Ontario.
I guarantee you that is a correct statement. Not to mention, Gary, but the live races that we do that you're going to be in, the numbers for those live races will actually blow Quaker State's mind. Unreal, and it's going to be so cool to get things put together and running.
I'm looking forward to it.
I want to touch on, you know, the impressiveness. Obviously, you've had the partner for a long time, and you guys have had a lot of dialogue. But I would be hasty to say that a majority of short track racers don't sell their sponsorship based on the amount of people that get in front of, you know, and for you to have those estimates and those, you know, those guidelines put together, that is something that people need to take note of, you know, competitors. You know, that is the meat to what your sponsorship is. And we don't talk about that enough, but that is something that, it's good that you mentioned that, because that is something that, obviously everybody says there's a lot of people at the racetrack, you know, in their sponsorship proposals. If they go right. talk to a real estate company, or if they go talk to a automotive shop, they say there's lots of people in the grandstands. There might be 500 or might be 1,000. But those are a lot less valuable than saying, look, it's going to be in front of 30,000 people, or it's going to be in front of 75,000 exactly. people. To quantify that, and obviously it's just a projection. You might get a rain out one night, and there might be, 5,000 people less. Or you might get good weather all year, and you might get 20,000 more.
Yeah,
right.
But to base a sponsorship and to base your value off of that portion is the best way of going. And don't try to get $100,000 from a company and only provide 20,000, people that you're in front of. Try to, maximize the value for the partner, and they'll be a partner for life.
Well, one of the things we used to do years ago when we did a proposal, we would talk about all the people that would see our car when we were towing it to the races.
Yeah.
So because in Ontario, you would have a little bit of an advantage there with 14 million people compared to 980,000.
Absolutely.
But really, the bottom line was, well, how many are going to be able to sit and watch you and hear your name and hear your sponsors? How many are going to hear that? How many people are going to be able to hear a Quaker State or PPG or Lincoln or Pie Chevrolet or Strictly Hydraulics, like all my sponsors? Who's going to hear that? Well, when you have that many people that you're going to be in front of, it's obviously more beneficial to be in front of race fans, a lot of them. And this place in Nova Scotia is going to provide that this year. I'm really excited about it.
We're with Gary Elliott tonight. He is out on Canada's East Coast, just outside Truro, Ontario.
Nova Scotia.
Truro, Nova Scotia. Easy for me to say. Gary, the last time we spoke, you were getting things put together, getting the shop put together, getting the car coming in, and you were working on formulating a crew for that number 36 car. How are you making out that way? Have you got your crew assembled that is going to be with you in the Parts for Trucks tour?
Yes, you know what? I've been so blessed. When I came down here, I had a fellow from Alberta that knows a lot of the guys down here suggested or recommended that he would come and work with me, Ray Doucette. So he's going to be with me. And then there's a fellow that raced down here for 40 years, Bob Landry. He's going to be with me. Jeff DaCosta, who helped the 89 team last year, the Pro Stock Tour, Donald Chisholm. He worked with his team last year. He's going to be with me. And I'm really kind of excited about two other ones, too, that down here, that Tyler Hallahan, he's the grandson of Jim Hallahan, is going to be
working
on my pit crew this year. So that's kind of exciting for me because I've got some nostalgia. And every one of them are involved in racing. And another fellow who's a go-kart champion, he called me. I put a post on my Facebook, or on my website. I didn't even post on Facebook. And through my website, he messaged me, and now he's going to be part of me too, part of my team. So I have five here, and then I have Shannon as well. She's going to be helping, and then also, and when I go to Nova Scotia, I'll have Jim Holzinga, or I mean back to Ontario, I'll have my son David, Jim Holzinga. I'll have Lloyd, who pitted me for years. I'll have my son, grandson Garrick, Troy, and Louis Halliday. They'll all probably help me when I go back to Ontario. So my old crew misses me too. So they're going to. I just hope that we can do, because right now somebody sneezed and then they closed all the borders. So, you know, right now I don't even know if I can, what we can do, if I can go there. I guess hopefully by the summer we can get to go, like not by the summer, because this is number one. The tour is my main thing. And then once it's over, then I go to Ontario.
Pretty wild, and Gary.
If we can race, that's what I want to do.
It's all about people, isn't it? And it sounds 100%. Like you're surrounded by excellent people.
I've said that many times. Racing is about the people, you know, and not just the competitors, not just the buddies that you high five in the pits, and they're very important too, and their families and crews and sponsors. But it's the fans, like who go there, and it's the track owners and their staff. It's all, everybody. It's just an awesome place for me to be.
And, Gary, I want to let everyone know, too, all the listeners know that our thoughts and prayers are with everybody out there on the East Coast. You guys went through some horrific stuff there last weekend, and there's no doubt we're all thinking of you guys out there. And you know what? It's one big family out there, you can guarantee it, and it's all part of this big family.
It sure is. It sure is. It's been a horrifying time. Unbelievable. But the people pulled together. They just did a great thing on Friday. They did a memorial, and one of my cousins played Bill Elliott. He played Over the Rainbow on the guitar, and he was one of the ones featured. There was a whole bunch of musicians that played tributes to the many people that had died. It was just horrifying. But they're strong, and they're going to recover. And you know what? We just thank God that we have people that are like that care for each other and support each other.
That's right. You got to believe, right, Gary? You got to believe.
Amen.
You
yes,
want to believe it. Gary, this has been great catching up with you. We sure appreciate it. And I'll tell you what, look forward to the day we get together out there on Canada's East Coast. We have got plans of doing race number two of the tour, plus a whole pile of others. But we're just waiting for word to find out when and where we'll be able to get together. But you can count on it. As soon as they say go, as soon as your wheels start to turn, you're going to see me, Jerry, Josh, you're going to see us all, buddy.
And you know what? I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm hoping that, you know, that this virus doesn't affect us anymore. I know it will for a while, but hopefully we can get some racing in, and maybe some of the tracks might have to be creative and just, you know, limit their seating to 1,500 or whatever, or 5,000 if they're big enough, and then, you know, up their ticket price, but sell less so that they can do the distancing if they can, if we have to do that. But, you know, because I care about the businesses too, you know, like these people that are struggling with their businesses, they can't open. But anyway, hopefully we can do that, Joe. That'd be so awesome to see you folks.
You betcha. Hey, I'll tell you what, if it can be done, it will be. You got some of the smartest minds in Canada out there on that East Coast in racing. And if there is any way possible, you can bet that Ken and all those guys out there and the tracks will pull it together.
Joe, I just want to, if it's okay, I want to thank, obviously Quaker State and Lincoln and Pi Chevrolet I got when I came down here.
Yep.
So they're with me, and also Grindstone Property Management in Ontario. He decided to stay with me. Strictly Hydraulics, PPG, and Permatex are all with me this year. And so I'm really looking forward to doing shows or doing whatever I can do to promote them for 2020.
Well, as soon as things start breaking open, Gary, and you can see your way clear, whether it's going to be a show on the Speedway or a show at a location, you please let us know, and we'll get you back on here to let everybody talk, to talk to everybody about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it very much.
That sounds great. Gary Elliott, you have a good one.
All right.
Go give Buttons a rub for us.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
You betcha. Yeah. That's Gary Elliott out there in Canada's East Coast. Sounds like he's ready to go, Junior.
He does for sure. And great group of guys. He's going to have a good team when he rolls in for sure into the back gate for the first race. And looking forward to seeing what he can do out there. I'm really, really excited to see Gary in a, you know, fully updated race car. Not to say that his race cars weren't prepared right before. They were prepared right. It's just that they weren't as up to date as what he's got today.
Technology,
he's got the best of everything.
Technology passed him.
Technology did pass him, and you know, with this, you know, setup that he's got, with this partnership that he's got, it's not just a, he didn't just buy a car from the butchers.
No.
He's got support with it. And you know, Cole and really the entire family over there are so smart. And they're going to provide, you know, a lot of data to help Gary, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the old dog can do.
Oh, I'll guarantee you something else, Joe. The data that they get from that 36 car into the 53 and the 54 car, they're you want to talk about a partnership? Watch out.
Yep.
These guys are really going to light some lamps this year, and it's going to be cool. Fans are going to win, I can guarantee you that. Quick break. And then off to Northern Ontario we go. We're going to go all the way up to Kenora, Lake of the Woods Speedway. And Anthony Leak is going to join us on the other side of the break.
Hi, my name's Matt Box, driving number 27, late model Monte Carlo, Provincial Trailer Rentals. And you're listening to Race Time Radio.
Logano's in the wall. He'll slide up and he'll slam on the safer barrier and he clips Larson. He'll send Larson.
The thrill of the race. Live from the track.
Definitely sliding into it out of control.
It's unbelievable how quickly things can change in racing.
There's no weak spot.
You just never know how it's going to play out.
Insider access to the drivers.
We'll roll with it. We're enjoying it. We'll collect as many trophies as we can.
And the exclusive home to Happy Hours, hosted by Kevin Harvick.
It's a new normal. Better figure it out.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio, Channel 90.
MAP TV, the only network dedicated to all things motorsports, is racing across Canada now. The only network destination of all things motorsports. MAP TV offers every type of motorsports racing. With grassroots racing events from across the country and around the world, MAP TV's programming schedule is truly second to none. MAP TV Canada. Contact your TV provider for availability now.
Canadian singer-songwriter Stephen Page.
I've been fairly quiet about political things over the last bunch of years. You know, I moved to the United States. I can't vote there. I'm not a citizen. I can't vote here anymore because I've been away for longer than 5 years. And I was wondering whether I had a right to speak up or whether it mattered whether I spoke up. Closest to a conclusion that I could come is this is who I am. And the best thing I can be as an artist is honest.
Canada Talks, Sirius XM Channel 167.
Racetime Radio.
Only on Sirius XM 167.
We get you close. If you're looking for miles per gallon, you're definitely at the wrong place. Maybe a few channels up or a few channels down, you'll find it. But this is Racetime Radio on Sirius XM 167.
And we are back with you live tonight on Racetime Radio. So glad you could tune in tonight. Don't forget to tell your friends if maybe they've never listened to Racetime Radio. We'd sure love to have them aboard every Sunday night for 2 hours right here live on racetimeradio.com. And soon as this virus starts freeing up and letting Ontario get back to work, we will have our op back in the Toronto studio at Sirius XM Channel 167. And then the show will be back on that channel live, as opposed to the tape delay that it is currently right now and has been since things here in Ontario got shut down. But we still air on Sirius XM Channel 167 at any rate.
Yeah. Well, hey, before we jump on,
yeah.
I want to give a shout out. And I just tweeted this that I was going to be talking about this, but I want to give an account a shout out on Twitter.
Good. Okay.
At Cam Harris 79.
At Cam Harris 79.
At Cam Harris 79. That's CamHarris 79. The number 79.
Hmm.
He is doing a really cool thing.
He's got
a paint program, right? He's doing fictional designs of NASCAR Pinty's cars,
yeah,
and NASCAR Xfinity cars and things like that, with brands that aren't involved in the sport or are just getting involved in the sport, whichever it may be.
Cool.
But tagging different drivers to them. So, yeah. You know, he's got like a Sleep Country Canada car. He's got a Hot Wheels car. He's got a Moosehead Brewery car. He's got, just scrolling through here, Leon's. He's got a Swiss Chalet, a Haviland car, a Max Milk, those types of things.
We'll
tagging the brands, tagging the brands, tagging, you know, a driver. You know, he's doing designs for Donald Teague and 22 Racing and Caden Lapcevich and a bunch of others.
Yeah.
And, you know, just doing fictional designs, but showing brands what their brand could look like on a race car. So valuable. And hats off. Keep doing what you're doing because I love the thought process behind it. I love your artwork, number one. And good on you, man. It's cool.
Very good. We'll check it out. Let's get back to the hotline, shall we? We'll get up to Northern Ontario. I believe we were able to take our coat off today, but maybe not. We'll check in with Anthony Leake at Lake of the Woods Speedway right outside Kenora. What's happening tonight, Anthony? How you doing?
I'm doing really well. It was a beautiful day today, 16 degrees Celsius. I couldn't have asked for anything better to spend 6 hours grading the racetrack.
Oh, you got to love it. No jacket required. I know I put a tweet out yesterday. This is going to be a day, no jacket required, kind of a Phil Collins kind of day. And that's the way it was up there today.
That's right.
You got to love it. The track looks like it's coming together. I've been following along on Facebook here. Things looking pretty darn good.
Yeah, you know, we got things going just a couple days ago. It was cold, barely getting to 0 degrees Celsius last Monday, Tuesday. In the last few days, it's been above 10, and it's been beautiful weather. We started working with getting the tow truck going and the grader going, and I spent last night and about 8 hours in total between last night and today just trying to reshape it. We've had some settling on the outside of the track because it is a new track. And so just kind of reshaping the track as much as we can so we get rid of the flat spots on the outside corners.
So how long, Anthony, will it take before that track sort of settles into where it's going to be and you guys are going to be okay? Now we can just groom it and go.
Well, we kind of did that when we started the first year, you know, just kind of did what we could with the material we had. There's not much you can do with it while it's settling. You just kind of, you know, sheep's foot it, pack it in, grade it, water it and so on and just kind of keep going. And then, you know, after enough rainfall and enough packing and so on, you start seeing those flat spots on the outside 10-15 feet. And the reason why we had it was because we had to build the track up. It wasn't like in a field where you can kind of just berm the outside the whole way. We had to, you know, take material from one end of the property to the other and we kind of did the track first and then did the outside of the track after. So there was just that, you know, 14-15 feet worth of height that we needed on that outside. So of course that just settled over about a year and a half. So now we're at that point where we can really shape it. We don't have a lot of clay on it because we had to haul the clay in. It was 28 minutes a round trip per load.
Mm.
We did almost 300 loads of that. So, you know, there's only about 15-16 inches of clay. So you kind of have to be careful where you take material from. But, you know, I've made really good progress today. You know, I was able to get the outside quite a bit of material and shave it nice. So it's probably got another, I don't know, 15 hours worth of work until I can really sheep's foot and pack it in and turn it into a racetrack.
Well, and this will be the only racetrack I can guarantee you where at the end of the night, everybody's going to be lined up right over there in front of the pressure washer. We're going to clean those cars off because we don't want that clay going away. Too expensive for it to go down the road.
Yeah, the nice advantage of this material is it's not super sticky type stuff. Like it's about, when we had it analyzed, it was about 60% clay and it's about 15 to 20% kind of a silty, and then the other 20 is about kind of a sand. There's very little rock or anything, which is nice, a huge benefit there. But luckily, it's not like a blue gumbo or, you know, stuff that kind of wads and sticks to everybody or goes flying through the air when it's in gigantic packs when the cars kick it out. So we're pretty lucky that way. It does firm up really good. It's a fast track. When you get water on, it gets tacky, but it doesn't rut up very much. It doesn't take much to pack it in and get it into shape. So I think that's a big advantage that we have.
Gotta love it. How about the competitors? Now, a fairly new racetrack, like a year and a half old. How's the competitor list starting to come? Everybody excited to get a race car and get out there?
Absolutely. I mean, it took a good year. I mean, we drew primarily from Emo, and which is 2 hours south of here, and Winnipeg, which is just over 2 hours west of here. And, you know, hats off to them for making the drive Friday nights and the odd Sundays we did, being able to support the track as we get into that, you know, the early stages. Right now, it looks like we have about 9 new drivers in the area here in Kenora that will be suiting up sometime when we get going here, including some really young people, a lot of new four-cylinder drivers that don't want to spend a ton of money, but they want to get a feel for it and see how they like it. And we have a few people that started last year locally here that have moved up into the pure stocks from the four cylinders. So all positive. 3 cars in each class is what we're looking at for improvements of the 3 total classes, so 9 cars in total to participate this year, which is really nice to see, especially to see that even spread across the 3 classes. You know, if I'd seen maybe 7 or 8 in one class and only 1 in the other 2, then I'd be maybe a little bit more nervous in terms of what people are looking after. But 3, 3, and 3, I couldn't be happier.
Talk a little bit about the hurdles. Obviously, a year and a half, getting the racetrack off the ground. You're obviously not new to motorsports, but talk a little bit about the hurdles that have popped up that you were maybe unexpected with a track that's just firing up for the first time.
You know, I think the biggest, struggles or things that I kind of ran into was really the construction itself. I feel like since we've had the track in place and that we had our first practice in October 2017, that, you know, it's been much smoother sailing since that point. I mean, there's lots of other things like the business end of it all that you have to deal with and so on. But, you know, it really, the struggle was really the from finding the property to the construction since that time. And that's kind of where my background is in the, you know, my primary experience was in the promotion of a established facility when I was in Emo for 10 years and learned, you know, a lot from there. So the real learning new experience for me was the building the track part. Now that we're in the operation, I just feel like, you know, it's the momentum of growing that it's taking the time and patience to be able to understand that this is something that people are going to slowly get into. I think the fan base has been there since day one. I mean, when we ran our long weekend show here, which is a big weekend in Kenora, I mean, we had like 1,300 people, which is phenomenal. We only have seating for about 8, so it was a little bit tight. But, you know, we had 40 cars in 4 classes, and so it was really great to see that. I think the fan support's there. The business community's really jumped on board over the last couple of years, so it's just a matter of making sure that we know that we see this growth in the car count, because, you know, we need to, you know, I'm hoping we get to 25, 30 cars within town here. Cause if you have a rainy or iffy day, you know, people aren't going to drive 2 hours and necessarily go a race. So, you know, it's very important to get that group of people that are within an hour drive to be racing and be committed to it so that we can put on a good program, even if it is iffy weather.
Talk a little bit about, just to kind of add to that, you know, we see it across the board, you know, where racetracks are battling with their municipality for noise or for traffic or numerous different reasons dealing with the municipalities. Talk a little bit about how, because I remember when you were just firing up, you guys were welcomed with open arms, and how is that relationship going on the municipality side? Have you guys had to do anything on the you know, local government side to change or to do anything different?
No, we haven't had anything. You know, we did this stuff with as much of a plan in place before building the thing, in terms of knowing that the zoning that we had was, you know, allowed this opportunity. The city actually designated the racetrack as light industrial while we're on heavy industrial zoning, which allows us to be able to have a racetrack. You can have light industrial on heavy industrial. And so that allows the opportunity if you have, you know, sound or dust or whatever that might seem obnoxious, you know, it just, that zoning was kind of the key. That was the key at the start. You know, if you're in a, you know, commercial type thing or something else, you know, that's when things get really complicated. But we met the needs of the zone. The only thing we had to do was pay for change of use. A change of use from, I think it was storage set to, and we changed it over to basically what the official plan
plant would say a recreational facility. I submitted documentation on sound of total distance, how it would sound to someone who was a kilometer away, 2 kilometers away. I submitted paperwork in terms of comparison to like live concerts and trains, because there's a train only 300 meters from the track. There's a mill just 500 meters north of us, and there's a crusher for an asphalt unit only 300 meters just west of us. So we're in an industrial, heavy industrial zone on a divided paved road. So when we submitted all that paperwork, you know, they were happy with what they saw. We do have a rock cut and a berm and stuff to help deflect noise from a lake that's further southeast of there. But we haven't had anything, per se. And I mean, we're not operating 24/7, and something could technically operate there 24/7. So we did our due diligence ahead of time and just made sure that we don't race until midnight and that kind of stuff.
We're with Anthony Leakey. He is with the Lake of the Woods Speedway just outside Kenora. What's your official title there, Anthony?
I'm the president and promoter.
So you're the be-all, end-all, man. You're the guy that everybody's going to come to.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Chief cook and bottle washer, I know you got tons of experience back at Emo Speedway. That's when I first got in touch with you. In touch with those guys still? I guess they're fairly close.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we worked, before this COVID-19 thing came in, we worked with Emo on moving their Saturday long weekend in August to a Friday so we could run a doubleheader modified special. And, of course, Emo runs mods full-time. We don't. And so we worked out a deal so that we could have Emo run Friday, run a two-day show in Kenora, which would help us because that's usually our biggest weekend with Harborfest here. They have live concerts in the late evening after 8 o'clock and so on. So there's lots of people in town. And then I've worked with Winnipeg a little bit in terms of scheduling, when they have classes, what classes they don't have. We invite the super trucks to come here from Winnipeg twice a year. This year was the plan. We had them once last year. And so we just kind of worked with the scheduling. So really good working relationship with both tracks. We've worked together in terms of our rules for our pure stocks and our four cylinders with Winnipeg. Emo runs a couple different classes other than the Midwest mods. Their street stocks are unsanctioned, so we don't match with them for the rule book. But it's been very positive, and it's been hugely beneficial to have this track here for the other two tracks too. It just really adds to the driver pool and the fan pool.
Yeah, and that's what you need, right? You got to be cooperative, work with the whole industry. And it's always good for absolutely everybody in the industry when that all can take place. It affects car counts. It affects race fans. It affects all of it. And that's the cool part. You've got that experience that you're able to bring to the table and to bring everybody in with you. That's exactly what the doctor ordered. But, Anthony, we got to throw it back to Toronto just for a quick news highlight. It only takes 90 seconds, and then we're back for hour number two. Can we get you to hang around here? I still got a couple more questions I want to ask you, and I don't want to cut you short.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you may not hear much on your end when we cut away here, but we will be back with you. So don't hang up. Just stay right in there. We'll try and get you the audio pumped back down the line. But we still have lots to ask Anthony about. And it sounds like a cool racetrack, Junior.
It does, for sure. And, you know, when you look at, there's tons of stories out there where racetracks have closed. This is a racetrack that opened.
Yeah.
That's the name of the game, and love it.
Yeah, you betcha. We're going to throw it back to Toronto, get you up to date on your news highlights that you may have missed over the last, 55 minutes or so. And then we are coming back for hour two. Anthony Leak is going to be right there with us, and we'll throw it back to Scott back in Toronto. Scotty, get us up to date, will you, buddy?
You're listening to Canada Talks on Sirius XM, channel 167.
Racetime Radio is brought to you by the Quality Inn, Halifax Airport, the official stay of the Racetime Radio broadcast crew. Also by APX Racewear, the motorsports leader in custom crew apparel and fire suits. Also by the Wooden Door Bistro.
Broadcasting live from the track.
We're here to get trophies.
Never give up, baby.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio Channel 90 is your home for all things NASCAR.
The yellow lights come on.
Perfect! Woo!
Everything's happening so fast.
Every race.
Hard contact into the safer barrier.
Exclusive interviews.
This is more than just a job. We don't get caught up in being famous.
The only broadcasting outlet in the world delivering NASCAR 24/7, 365.
Thank you. You are the man.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio.
Channel 90. With the two Joes
here on Race Time Radio
on Sirius XM 167,
where Canada talks.
And just like that, hour number two begins tonight on Race Time Radio. Welcome, everyone, on Sirius XM Channel 167, Canada Talks. I'm Joe Chisholm, along with Junior. And on the hotline, we continue our conversation now with the president, CEO, and all the, he's the chief cook and bottle washer, Anthony Leek at Lake of the Woods Speedway, just outside Kenora, Ontario, way up there in the northern part of Ontario. Great dirt track they put together about a year and a half ago, and things are just starting to gel now. Anthony, I got to ask you, and I know I asked you this before, but I want fans or listeners to that are up in that area to be able to key right in on where you guys are. Where exactly is the racetrack? Are you just outside Kenora, or how far are you? Whereabouts are you?
Well, we're essentially about a 10-minute drive east of downtown Kenora. So to get, I'm just north of, maybe a minute drive north of downtown, and I'm about 10, 12 minutes if I take the bypass. So it's right just 10 minutes east of town. I'd say about 8 kilometers maybe just east of town. So how Kenora's kind of built is that there's just the municipality itself is quite large. It's amalgamated from a couple other municipalities from the 90s. And this section where the track is considered all heavy industrial zoning for quite a range from basically the CP rail line north to almost to the bypass. So it's kind of nestled in a really great spot in terms of being surrounded by, you know, rock and trees and railroad tracks and a gigantic mill that is one of our largest employees here, and a couple quarries and the airport is just about a kilometer north of us as well. So really, in just a beautiful spot. I mean, you'd almost, you know, especially on nights leading up to the races or any evening, it's just a beautiful, beautiful place to be. I mean, I'll sit in the bleachers and just, with the sun setting, the orange reflecting off the rock cut and the trees and everything here, and the birds and the frogs and everything else. It's beautiful. It's just a gem spot.
Yeah, it is. I've gone through Kenora a couple of times. Recently, or the most recent time I went through was about 2.5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago now. On our way back from transporting my sister and my brother-in-law from Yellowknife, Northwest Territories. We came all the way down through, come down through Kenora, and like you say, just a gorgeous area. You got a lot of wildlife around there. If I remember correct, I believe we stayed, I want to say that it was just outside Kenora somewhere. And that morning we got up and started driving down the Trans-Canada again, I guess Trans-Canada Highway, and bears. Seen bear right there. Do you guys get a lot of wildlife right there?
Absolutely. Every once in a while, the way the track's situated, it's a lot of low-lying area. And on the other side of the rock cut, there's actually, I've been back there when it's frozen hard and not a lot of snow, and there's quite a few like moose and deer and wolf trails. You don't see too many that come out onto the track side, just the way the property is kind of set. But every once in a while, I'll be out there and I'll see a wolf cross the pit area and go to the other side of the road into the bush on the other side. I've come close a couple times.
Pretty wild, isn't it? And I guess now, too, with the virus happening, a lot of cross-Canada touring that would be firing up right around this time of the year, you're probably not seeing a lot of outside traffic buzzing by, are you?
No, it's pretty quiet, yeah. We usually have this time of the year a bit of a lull before everything gets crazy come the long weekend in May. But, yeah, it's definitely quieter than what it probably could be around this time. But usually this time of the month or in the spring, it's kind of like, hey, the snow's gone, but not everybody's showing up yet. So you don't really miss it quite yet. You're in that transition point. But, you know, if you give it another, you know, in a week or two, you'll start to realize that, there's not as many people here as there normally is.
As a guy, you know, you have a great media background. You've done a lot on social media. You've built a great presence. How do you get corporate partners involved locally? Like, are you doing anything fun and innovative on that front?
You know what? I'm a firm believer of relationships. I mean, it's one thing to ask for money. It's another thing to engage in conversation and to, you know, find out what their interests are, what they like, what they don't like, what they'd like to see, and so on. I mean, we can't promise the world for everybody, but, you know, I'm very much like, hey, you know what? Here's a couple free tickets. You want to come and check it out if you like it, you know, and you want to sponsor in the future, that'd be great. I mean, to get started, to build the track, we had tremendous support. I mean, the main contractor that did our work, Moncrief Construction, I mean, they jumped on board after a meeting with myself and the mayor at the time, and we had a sit-down conversation on how we'd go ahead with it and why this just seemed like something that would fit for Kenora. And Kenora's motorsports history is a lot bigger than what you might see on the surface. And me, not being from Kenora originally, didn't realize that they used to ice race all the time till the early 90s, and everyone's into motocross and snowmobile racing and, you know, everything under the sun, with the exception of dirt track racing, which was a little bit in the 60s when everyone had a dirt track in every town in northwestern Ontario. So, you know, it was just that was the key thing there. But in terms of new sponsors and so on, I've kind of focused as much on terms of trying to be as self-sustaining in terms of our income and the fans as possible, so that we know we have sustainability before worrying about whether we have $25,000 or $30,000 worth of corporate sponsorship. It's kind of like trying to make sure we have a break-even point. But at the same time, of course, we do have some really dedicated sponsors that come back every year that we've had a working relationship with. And some of those business owners also now have relatives that are getting into race cars. So it really works hand in hand that way. And that's how you build that relationship over time. I started very early with businesses on what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it. So a lot of them have been on since day one before we even started construction.
I wouldn't doubt you guys are the ultimate entertainment center as well for Kenora, Ontario, and surrounding locations. You guys would have to figure right in there for an entertainment destination for everybody, at least to make it out once or twice throughout the course of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that was one of the questions I got a lot of from people was, you know, what's your purpose of this place? And I said, think about it. Kenora is a destination location. And I said, how do we make it so we can add diversity to the tourism industry here? I said, this brings in, not only helps bring new people to the sport in an area that people are already coming to and want to see something different other than, you know, sitting on the lake or in a boat or at the cottage or cabin or whatever they have, but also to bring in a whole demographic that would never consider Kenora as a destination before. So you're combining both the newcomer, the new person that comes to Kenora that is wants to see something new in terms of opportunity or entertainment options, and then someone who is part of the sport but would never have considered Kenora as a place to actually watch racing. So it's really combining, it's the best of both worlds, combining the new fan and the traditional fan that never used Kenora as a place to go to.
And you have Husky the Muskie.
Husky
right.
The Muskie, yeah. Good on you guys, I'll tell you. I was on the Ontario Partnership Tourism Board back when it started up. I'm rewinding the clock here quite a bit here.
This is a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
He wasn't even gray back then.
But our job, our task as a committee, and we were representing the province of Ontario, from a marketing perspective, it was our task, our job, was to highlight from a tourism side where we should direct people. And you got to, you know that I'm sitting on a board with 15 other people that I owned a Speedway at that time. I owned the Sauble Speedway. And I kept saying that, you know, this is, albeit Ontario is the most beautiful place we'd want to have, and for people to come anywhere in Ontario. But I got to tell you, from what I see, we promote fish and feathers all the time. And I there's really some room there for an extreme tourism. And I said it would be very popular. You'd have the younger demographic. You'd have everything that you could possibly want. And they looked at me like I had three heads. So needless to say, I didn't stay on that board too long.
Right.
Tried to do my best to give motorsports a voice, whether it be, you know, like what you're doing there, or asphalt, or, you know, snowcross, or motocross, yeah. whatever, all of it, extreme tourism. And it really is an issue. It should be a thing. And it's great to see you guys putting together what you've done up there. Hey, is Ricky Weiss showing up yet at the Speedway?
You know what? It's funny you mentioned that. About a year and a half ago, he asked me when the next first late model show is going to happen in Kenora. So, you know, it's kind of on the radar. In fact, the guy who runs the Northern Late Model Racing Association in, I think this was, yeah, in North Dakota, Brad Singh, actually called me a few weeks ago and asked about that too. But of course, with COVID-19, that changes the border a whole lot. The other thing that I wanted to know was that, it's kind of ironic that coming from a dirt track background, that our first racing event was actually a sled event. The Stay in Kenora 100 a couple of years ago in February 2018. We started with actually only five sleds that first year in the single cylinder. And 2019 we had 11. We added the twin cylinder races. We had two of them last year. This year we had 17 single cylinders and we had 11 twins.
Gotta love it.
It's just amazing the growth we've seen in that, and lots of people from town here. It was minus 15, but sunny skies. We had amazing racing. The twin shootout, the winner, there was a 20 lapper, and the winners were only a half a second apart between first and second. So I just, like I said, things are just really starting to boom, and it's a real bummer that COVID-19's gotten in the way, because this year was going to be a heck of a year coming up, and I'm really hoping that we'll be able to salvage something before summer's over.
Let's talk schedule and full knowledge that we've got coronavirus sitting here, and it's going to stop everything, at least for a certain amount of time that we don't know how long. Schedule-wise, what did you have laid out, and what do you have laid out?
So what we had laid out was to have a practice on the 9th of May and the 15th of May, and then open on June 5th. And basically run 3 weeks in June, 3 weeks in July, 5 weeks in August, and one weekend in September. What we've done based on the government's regulations is that for now, we've moved practice to May 23rd. We've canceled all races in June, and we would run a practice on the 13th. Of course, we would do certain guidelines and have a plan in place for social distancing and so on. As we get closer to the dates here, and then hopefully open on July 3rd. So we still have a season to run. Last year we didn't start till July 5th. So really, in all honesty, to run in, not run in June is not the end of the world. As I've started working on the racetrack, I've realized there's a lot more work to do there than thinking we're going to open June 5th.
It definitely adds up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, you know. And so as a result, it's not necessarily a bad thing to have a bit more time. And of course we can't have many people there to even work out there, so that slows things down as well. So you know, I feel very comfortable with being able to open on July 3rd as long as everything else goes well. I'm really hoping we can salvage a season out of this year. I mean, it'd just be a real bummer when you see the momentum that we've had. So we'll just take it day by day, week by week.
Yeah. You theoretically miss black fly season up there too, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Theoretically, like, I mean, it should end around July, right?
Usually, yeah. We get deer ticks is usually our biggest problem the last couple of years here.
Right.
So usually it's pretty quiet by that point as well as we get past the May and June. But I'm really hoping that we'll be able to pull off. We had some commitment for big sponsorship for our mod two-day show on the August long. Mm. Some of them have fallen through. We're going to have to decide what we're going to do for that weekend if things do kind of return mostly to normal by that point, because modifieds aren't cheap to bring in, especially as a special.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to play it by ear. Guys want to go racing. Girls want to go racing. I mean, like, speaking of girls, I mean, we have, I think, three or four new female drivers coming into racing in the four cylinders this year. So it's just awesome to see that happen as well. Like, just so many positive things that I'm really hoping that we'll be able to go ahead sometime this summer and get things rolling, because I think it's just going to be awesome.
Let's point the listenership to wherever everything is for Lake of the Woods Speedway. Of course, website, Facebook, you tell us.
Yeah, lakeofthewoodspeedway.com. They can check out all sorts of news and our current driver listing, as well as the rule packages and schedule results, or they can go to facebook.com/LOW Speedway, become a fan of that. And I post quite regularly on there and try to keep people up to date. We're also on Twitter, Low Speedway, LOW Speedway. And I'm trying to get Instagram going. I'm too old for this Instagram stuff. You know, that's a whole generation.
So am I. I'm with you.
Well,
I'm
now the nice part is you glossed over Instagram, so now you just got to focus on learning TikTok.
TikTok, yeah.
And after exactly. If it ain't one thing, it's another.
I was just going to say, after you get that one mastered, they'll come up with about 5 or 10 more of them that'll totally distract everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah, incredible. Anthony, this has been great catching up with you. Fans coming across Canada. When you're planning your trip and you're driving across Canada, you're going to want to make plans to stay in Kenora. It's a really good spot to stay. And look at this, you'll be able to go to the racetrack. What night is race night?
For the majority, we're Friday nights. With the exception of that 2 day, it would be a Saturday, Sunday, and we have a couple other Sunday shows. So be sure to review the schedule before you head on out.
Absolutely. And I know Carl is doing his part to grow the fan base. We've got to congratulate Carl Mulder and his significance. Look at that. He's a dad once again.
He sure is. And he's an amazing flagman, and he's had lots of great compliments. He's done an amazing job doing what he does out there. And I work beside him on race nights on the receiver and help him out with flags if we have lap cars coming out. And he's just been awesome to work with, very professional in how he does things. So it's great to have Carl and just having a really well-experienced flagman at a new racetrack. I mean, you can't, when it comes down to the people you need to have to operate a racetrack, a flagman, an experienced flagman, a new racetrack with new drivers is pretty much key and paramount to putting on a great program.
Absolutely, and you guys got the right people in the right spots, my friend. It's kind of cool. What do you say we catch up with you again after this virus is out of the way and we get that green flag in Carl's hand?
Anytime.
Sounds good, Anthony. That's Anthony Leake. He's up at Lake of the Woods Speedway. You can check him out online, check him out on Facebook, all of the above. Great little racetrack that'll be firing up. They got some a really good program coming at us, and it's going to be cool. You want to check them out? Absolutely. Especially if you're coming across Canada. Like I say, stop there for the night and check out a night of racing and then continue on your trip. You kill two birds with one stone. We're going to hit a break. When we come back, we got old Seven Time going to join us from New Brunswick. Yeah, we got Brad Mann, our color commentator for Racetime Radio. Haven't heard from him since last summer. We're going to hear from him next, right here on Racetime.
This is Dave McCullough, and you're listening to Racetime Radio.
From coast to coast, you're listening to Canada Talks.
Racetime Radio is brought to you by the Quality Inn, Halifax Airport, the official stay of the Racetime Radio broadcast crew. Also by APX Racewear, the motorsports leader in custom crew apparel and fire suits. Also by the Wooden Door Bistro.
If you're a Springsteen fan, you just found the promised land. Hear rare interviews and performances. Live concerts.
Is there anybody alive?
Celebrity guest DJs.
This is Rob Lowe.
Hey, baby, it's Little Steven here.
And more exclusives when listening to Bruce Springsteen's channel.
Welcome, Bruce Springsteen, to E Street Radio, your home away from home.
Great to be here.
E Street Radio, Sirius XM Channel 20.
Broadcasting live from the track.
We're here to get trophies.
Never give up, baby.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio Channel 90 is your home for all things NASCAR.
The yellow lights come on and boom.
Everything's happening so fast.
Every race.
Hard contact into the safer barrier.
Exclusive interviews.
This is more than just a job. We don't get caught up in being famous.
The only broadcasting outlet in the world delivering NASCAR 24/7, 365.
Thank you. You are the man.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio.
Channel 90. MAP TV, the only network dedicated to all things motorsports, is racing across Canada now. The only network destination of all things motorsports. MAV TV offers every type of motorsports racing. With grassroots racing events from across the country and around the world, MAV TV's programming schedule is truly second to none. MAV TV Canada. Contact your TV provider for availability now.
Mad Dog Sports Radio is opinionated, passionate sports talk with a bite from the hijinks of the morning men.
I bet your parents do too. They go big bulk shopping.
Hey, so
I got 50 trips.
jars of dump sauce.
We don't even eat that sauce.
But I got a good deal.
To the inside of Adam Schein.
Bill Belichick is the best coach in the history of sports.
Not NFL. Sports.
And the animated energy of the Mad Dog himself,
Mad Dog.
Christopher Russo.
This is the channel to talk about your favorite sports team. Mad Dog Sports Radio, Channel 82, or anytime on the Sirius XM app.
Taking you all the way to the track
and back.
And welcome back, everybody, to Racetime Radio. Well, our next guest, I always look forward to talking to this guy. He's a dear friend of mine and a great guy to have on Racetime Radio on all of our live broadcasts that we do from the East Coast to Canada. Let's welcome in seven-time champion. We got Big Brad Men happening. What's going on there, Bradley? How you doing, buddy? I haven't talked to you in a long time.
I'm good, Joe. How are you guys? You and Joe Jr. getting along good?
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely.
We disagree on a majority of things, but that makes for good radio.
Don't forget the old man's got a lot of wisdom.
Hey, that's right.
To listen to him.
No, 100%. No, for sure. And usually we're just making up for good radio, right? We agree about everything.
One thing, Joe, before we get started, my heart and thoughts goes out to everybody in Nova Scotia with the tragedy we had there, along with the rest of Canada that's fighting this COVID-19. Hope everybody's being safe, and we wish the best for everybody.
Absolutely. Well said, Brad. Definitely. I know just a tragedy that everybody's been going through out there, and pretty wild. That's all it's beyond wild. All we've done is think about everybody out there in Nova Scotia, and we'll continue to do that. And they're in their hearts and prayers, I can tell you that. I know we all look forward to getting back out to Nova Scotia for some racing. I know you're centered around New Brunswick, and you frequent racetracks all over the Maritimes here, Brad. This virus is going to screw us up pretty good, I think.
Yeah, this is going to probably put a nail in the gear wheel, or a clog in the gear wheel, as you'd say, whether there is a season or isn't a season. A lot of uncertainty around everything, so we just play it by ear and wait and see how everybody makes out. Nova Scotia's been hit harder than we have been in New Brunswick. New Brunswick's fared pretty well on this. The government's done a great job. They jumped on it early. Although our borders are closed between Nova Scotia and also Quebec, it's different times, Joe. The one common thing is I look inside and I've still got 4 feet of snow in my yard.
I know. We, of course, I haven't talked to you in a while, but we have texts back and forth fairly frequently. And I know you sent me that photo the other day, and I could not believe it. Here I am sitting on the dock with me and my Wilbur, and it's beautiful. I'm sitting there in a little sweater. He's got like 4 feet of snow still out.
Why do you live there?
He loves it.
You should move away from there, Brad. Well, you come over here to Ontario. We'll keep care of you, man.
Well, we call snow white gold here in the north where I am, and that's cha-ching, cha-ching. So we love it. And
I hear you, man.
I'm an avid snowmobiler, so I love the winter months.
Yeah, you are, too. How did you? I would imagine you got lots of mileage on this year on the sleds.
Yeah, we did. We did a premier's ride. We spent 3 days with the premier in New Brunswick and traveled up around the northern part. So that was a pretty good run. We did a Canadian Tire run. I probably put on 5,000 kilometers this winter.
Wow. Oh, man. That's typical Bradman stuff. You guys are always on the sled. Karen doing well?
Yeah, she is. Of course, you know, she's first line responder, so it's been trying times, but we've been fortunate here in Cavington. We did not have any admissions to the hospital at all. We did have some people test positive, but it never got that it made it to the hospital. So the hospital had made 2 wards available. But as we speak, it's the last 5 days is 0 cases in the province, and everything's well. And this is one time living in rural Canada is kind of lucky for us.
Paying dividends, and that's good, Brad. I'm great, really glad to hear that. I know it's a tight-knit community that you're in there, it's one of those situations, man. If you guys can keep it locked down and flatten it, it should stay away for a little while. At least we hope that's the way it is. So your ear is always to the pipe. I know it is. What are you hearing New Brunswick-wise? What's Lonnie been up to? What's all those guys been doing? You hearing new cars and people coming out to the tour, or what's going on?
Well, I'm not quite sure what Lonnie's going to end up doing, but his time will be freed up. I did have a conversation with Matt Harris probably a week ago, and Matt, this was actually before COVID-19 came out, and Matt had decided to take the year off of racing and concentrate on his business. He's quite busy in the construction business, so he had already made up his mind to do that. So Lonnie was full-time keeping those two Harris racing cars going for Matt, so that's going to free Lonnie up quite a bit. So he would have some time to go to the tour, if it so be it, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll have to see what all shakes out there. Ashton Tucker, another one. Dustin, all those Tucker guys. Have you been around that shop or hearing anything out of those guys?
Well, the Silver Motorsports team was ready to go. They were ready to go run down the States early. Actually, they were scheduled to go down to Oxford early. First race they were going to take over was down the States, and they were going to pick out the big races like the IWK 250, the Cat 200, and stuff like that. So they were all geared up and ready to go.
We'll have to see how things all shake out. That the season isn't totally over. I do believe we're going to have a little interruption off the beginning of it. But you know what, Brad? We just may get lucky. And maybe the second half of the season will all play out. I don't know.
Yeah, it's nobody really knows, Joe, right now with anything. I mean, I've worked straight through. I mean, the auto repair business, we're considered essential workers. A lot of differences around the store, like plexiglass up in front of all the counters and stuff. And I mean, it's trying times. You can't really plan too far ahead. Even where I go for the summer to put my trailer in the summertime, well, Quebec border being closed, so we can't go over there. So we don't know what's going to take place. So anyway, whatever happens, we'll adjust to it. And we're used to going on the fly. So minute we get the word, we'll be good to go.
No kidding. I know you will be good to go. You'll be rocking and a rolling. You put a lot of miles on, Brad, to not only call the races, but to go to racetracks. Everything seems to be a way for you. But you get on it, man. You get on that vehicle and away you go. You don't mind going from one end of the country to the other to get racing in. And that's what happens when you're a seven-time champion. If you can't be in a car, you got to be watching them, right?
Well, we are. And, I mean, we've turned wheels ever since I was a kid. I mean, I started racing snowmobiles. I was 8 years old, so I was always going on the fly somewhere. So it hasn't changed a whole lot. We just don't have a number on the door of the truck, but other than that, we're still going pretty good.
You know,
blown away that you have 4 feet of snow.
That's northern New Brunswick.
That is, yeah.
Yeah, right on the border of Quebec. That's That's where Brad lives.
Incredible.
But Brad, I was going through Twitter, I don't know whether 3-4 days ago, having a look through, and I want to say, I don't know whether it was Mike Riniak's feed, or maybe it wasn't. No, you know what? It wasn't Twitter. It was Facebook. And I was rolling through, and I seen a picture of you back in your Pennzoil days with that Pennzoil car. I don't know whether it was at Miramichi or where the photo was taken. But, Brad, man, those were the days, man. When you were in that car, you were always a threat to win.
That Pennzoil car, Joe, was probably the most famous car to ever come around the Maritimes. From 92 to 94, that sportsman car was probably the feardest piece of yellow you would ever see coming into town, to be honest. And it was quite a hot rod, and we were able to win a couple of sportsman championships with it before we took the Pennzoil colors over to the Pro Stock car and carried on winning them with that. But that picture that was on Facebook was 1992 at Miramichi Speedway. And lo and behold, Jeff Siliker, Brad's brother, along with Jeff's father, Wayne, was building my engines at that time. They were at my crew back in 1992.
No kidding.
Mind you, if you had a close-up picture, we were a lot thinner back then, too.
weren't we? Well, I wasn't. I was heavier back then. I went the reverse way, but Brad, technology-wise, back in those days, has anything changed with today? Because I know you stay up on it as well. You still got to do as much homework today as what you did back then, or was it harder back then?
Oh, my God, Joe. You'd have to do way more homework today with all the stuff that's out there in the market. I mean, that was a Canadian Racing Products built frame that we had built that come out of Ontario, which was a first for us because we always built our own cars. We got Novas and welded pipes in and did the best we could. And that was the first time I'd ever was in a coil spring car because the old Novas were a leaf spring. And back in the day when we started, Joe, we went to the junkyard for everything. I mean, back here in the Maritimes, it was 1990 before we had aftermarket bodies on cars. And I picture of a 1990 that we put on here in my shop, and we thought we did a pretty good job. Well, lo and behold, we learned real quick that we did a real mess that year. And by 92, we learned we needed to get the nose down and stuff, and the Pennzoil car had the body on it right. But we were junkyard. I was in the auto parts business at the time, and most of the parts on the car were TRW, was big in the business at that time, so it was all stock stuff. And then we went to the Pro Stock Series in 95 when we won the first New Brunswick Tour. And there was, man, there were so many adjustments on this Pro Stock car. And the first car we had was a Robbie Crouch Actor car, which was built by Levitt, who now works for Hendrick Motorsports. But nobody knew too much about the Levitt chassis around here. And we traded off and went to Port City in 97 and got another championship still carrying the Pennzoil colors back then, too. And but the Pro Stocks got real complicated, a lot of adjustments, and you really had to study it. Well, you look at a sportsman car today, and they're darn close to a Pro Stock car, Joe. And, I mean, bump stops and all this stuff, we didn't have any of that back then. I would have to think today you pretty much have to be a computer whiz to sit and work on these things.
Well, that's what I was going to say, Brad. Back in your day, it was a school of hard knocks. You had books to go by. You had a telephone that had a cord on it, and you had to search stuff out. Today, you've got the Internet. How big of an advantage would that have been back in your day?
Well, it was kind of funny because in 1992, I was in Daytona in the winter down for the 500, and I went to Duke Sutter's School of Racing, and he had a computer program for $200. So I didn't know nothing about a computer, and I called back to one of my guys and asked him if he thought that was any good. And it was funny because the program said, if you thought your car was good, you're at about 50% of your capability. If you buy my program and follow it, you'll unload, you'll be at 95% capability of the car. So Jerry, my cool guy, he said, yeah, I can understand that. So I bought the program, brought it back. We stripped the car, roll centers and everything, and I still have $200 back in 1992 wasn't a lot of money, but computer was kind of questionable. We did it all that winter, and we went down to Mir Machine, and we unloaded the first day, and we were like 6/10 better than we were the year before.
Wow.
And I still didn't believe, you know, I said, well, the track must have changed. You can't gain that much, but, I mean, I could run the car inside, outside. So opening day of practice, we stood at the fence. We didn't practice. We were just standing there with our stopwatches. And we were literally that much faster in the field. And we just looked at each other and shook our heads. But this program asked you to measure the track, the degrees of bank, and put that in. It spit out the spring rate. It spit out the tire stagger, pressures, everything. So it was, we were maybe a little ahead of our time with that technology. But it certainly was a lot easier back then than I dream of it being today.
The problem with it is now, back in the day, it was $200 for that type of software. Now you got to go to PRI and you got to see the latest and greatest. But you have to buy 75 different things that cost $500 each in order to do it. Today, I would say that today it's easier if you have the financial backing because you can buy all the knowledge that you need. You know, I would say that, you know, versus you could pick up the phone today and buy that knowledge from 10 different sources. But the problem is implementing that in incrementals that are so small in order to learn what each one of those things do, right? Like it's just incredible.
Big difference between then and today.
There's a massive difference, but it's also, and I want to point this out, I think that is the product of having a good rule book. Do you agree with that? That's kind of the root of the thought process of the program that they're doing at Sauble Speedway with the United Eights is to get away from the rule book and allow performance parts and allow, you know, creativity to come back, where now the creative portions, you have to get 75 or 80 different things that are worth, you know, a hundredth of a second, as opposed to spending $500 on an intake or a computer program that might help you set up your car.
Well, even back in the day, Brad, you were going by the rules. You did have the parts, and they still wanted to disqualify you when you were tore down and had the right parts, right?
Joe, they used to prisoner wear engine bolts that wouldn't take the motor apart. I'll tell you, man, we didn't have anything in the engine. All our stuff was in the chassis, and to this day, they still wouldn't see what we had. We studied the chassis, we studied the rule book, and they would change rules. Most Sunday nights, rolling out of Riverside, they'd have me a new rule. Don't come back with this next week. And the last rule in the rule book was that the track owner had the right and reserve to change the rules at any given time. So this is what we get handed. And then 7 weeks we went back, we were faster, so we had to go over and tell the tech man, geez, thanks for making that new rule, we're faster now, you know? But it got to be... got to be quite the hassle, and I know we pretty near quit the sport. It got to be such a hassle at the time. And '94, I sold a car at the end of the season and bought a racetrack in Miramichi at the time, and we went to pro stock racing, and seemed to be a lot less hassle with the pro stock racing. There was a bunch of us all went at the same time, but last summer, like Larry Somerville and I were talking, and back in the day, Joe, in the '90s with the sportsman cars, and we ran all over the country, and after the race was over, which motel you were at, and the pizza and the pops, and everybody was having fun.
Yeah.
And it was a lot more fun back then than what it is today with the competitive. And I can tell you, when I first went to the tour in 05, 06, I had a $50,000 sponsorship from Subway.
Right.
And I mean, we ran up front those 2 years. We had the best of everything. Well, I can tell you the last year we ran, and I always ran within a budget, whatever we were sponsored, that's what I worked with. I never went crazy with it. And 2014, the last year we ran, I was running on a $20,000 budget, and you just can't compete. At top teams right now, I would say $150,000 to $200,000, the top
pairs. Ah, yeah, yeah, they'd be putting a lot of money, a lot of car, a lot of knowledge, a lot of parts and pieces, and the training and everything that these guys are going through is definitely going to be a different environment. When we get that green flag in the air, looking and knowing what you know about the Parts for Trucks Tour, who do you think is going to be the guy to watch this year? And I know there's a whole herd of them, but which one stands out to you, Brad?
Well, there's going to be two kids again. And, I mean, I snowmobile on this winter. I was spent supper one night with one of the crew, Cole Butcher's team, and Cole's slated to run the full season this year in the Parts for Trucks Tour. So, you know, you're going to have him, you're going to have Blakehorn going at it. So those are two likely suspects that will be battling it out every week up front. They're two young guns, and they certainly got the tracks figured out. And you never know who else is coming up. I mean, the tour is so tight, but you always got to watch them two characters when they're in the field.
I know, and when we go around the horn for doing the picks on those live broadcasts, I just about don't even have to ask when it comes to Brad Mann. He usually takes that Black Betty 67 car.
I do, Joe. I always go over and talk to Grandma and Grandpa Blakehorn every week in the trailer, and I just get a kick out of those two people that been together for 67 years, and they still work at Blakehorn Recycling in the daytime, and they're just a joy to sit down and talk with, and Grandma pretty well runs the show there, and it's kind of neat. It's a family deal to them, so I just always go there. I don't have anything against any of the drivers in the field. I'm good friends. Kent Vincent, that crew in the island, all the boys in the island, the 18 team in the island. I'm friends with a lot of the guys, but just a number, and I always go check it out with Dale. I said, is it good enough to win? And he'll tell me, yes or no, and And most times I'll stick with them anyways, just to keep you guys buzzing.
Absolutely. Good stuff, Brad. This has been a gas catching up with you. I know we're going to do it again before we do go back into green flag racing. All your hockey stuff done. You've been doing a lot of announcing, too, through the winter. Is all your hockey wrapped up?
Yeah, that kind of came to an abrupt halt, Joe. We were just ready to start the playoff series, the first round, and we were going to play Edmonton in the first round, who we did last year. We ended up finishing third in the league in our division. Then tickets were actually sold for game one. We were going to go to Edmonton, and COVID-19 come out, and the league governors had a meeting, and they canceled the playoffs. So we never got to the playoffs. We had the second highest attendance increase in the league this year, so it was good. My owner, Canadian Tire, owns a team, bought it in June, so of course we're more deeply involved than ever. We had a good year. We sold, I was in charge of the advertising, so the PR work for all of that, so we did very well on that, and we were having a successful season, and it's too bad it got cut short the playoffs, but it was just like the switch turned off in a minute on you.
Yeah, no kidding. It's just amazing. And I know you always get those fans out on the island all fired up with some of the sayings you do in hockey. I guess you'll just re-rack them and have to get them all jumping again when we hit Racetime Radio.
Yeah, we do. And we traveled a lot this year, Joe. We met a lot of fans at a lot of places. So it's always interesting. The fans come up to the broadcast booth. They want to meet you, and we're in some other rinks, and we have even heavily exposing fans coming over and wanting to chit-chat with me. And I remember one night, I was just before Christmas, and this is hilarious, but we were playing Grand Falls, and we lost them overtime, so I was getting ready to sign off, and I signed off the air, and this guy was standing there, and I said, "Can I help you?" And he said, "I just wanted to meet you. My wife and I listen to you every Friday night, no matter who you're playing. I'm from Grand Falls. I'm the Undertaker." And I looked at him. I said, "Man, I ain't ready for you yet."
Yeah,
but anyway, him and his wife had 3 billets from the Grand Falls team, so he just wanted to come and say hi, and they tune into my broadcast every Friday night, no matter who was playing. And he said, "I don't know where you come up with some of your sayings, man, but he said, you're entertaining."
Yeah, the Dipsy Doodle.
Dipsy Doodle around in the corner.
Good stuff. Brad, man, this has been a gas, buddy. I look forward to getting back together with you. Give Karen a big hug, and look forward to seeing you again this summer.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot.
You want to believe it. That's Brad Mann, old 7-time, and he's also a color commentator on our Racetime Radio live broadcast that we do out on Canada's East Coast. Final break of the night. When we come back, we're coming back with a Gander Mountain Truck Series guy. We got, what's that guy's name? Grant Enfinger. Oh, yeah, I remember now. Grant Enfinger on the other side of the break. Stay there.
Hi, I'm Bob Finnegan, the starter for the Oscar Super Series. You're listening to Racetime Radio.
NFL is on SiriusXM. Listen to every game from the preseason through Super Bowl 53 on your radio.
Here we go. Tackle football. Let's play.
And remember, your hometown broadcast is always available on the SiriusXM app. When you're at home, turn down the TV volume and stream the game on your phone and SiriusXM connected devices and speakers. And when your team isn't playing, follow the National Football League 24/7 on SiriusXM NFL Radio, Channel 88.
Broadcasting live from the track.
We're here to get trophies.
Never give up, baby.
SiriusXM NASCAR Radio Channel 90 is your home for all things NASCAR.
The yellow lights come on and on.
Perfect!
Everything's happening so fast.
Every race.
Hard contact into the safer barrier.
Exclusive interviews.
This is more than just a job. We don't get caught up in being famous.
The only broadcasting outlet in the world delivering NASCAR 24/7, 365.
Thank you, you are the man.
SiriusXM NASCAR Radio.
Channel 90.
Racetime Radio is fueled by BP Race Fuels, the worldwide leader in race fuel technology. Dawson Dental Centers. Get your victory lane smile at DawsonDental.ca.
MAP TV, the only network dedicated to all things motorsports, is racing across Canada now. The only network destination of all things motorsports. MAV TV offers every type of motorsports racing. With grassroots racing events from across the country and around the world, MAV TV's programming schedule is truly second to none. MAV TV Canada. Contact your TV provider for availability now.
Racetime Radio is back. Once again, Joe Chisholm.
And welcome back, everybody, to Race Time. Man, this 2 hours just blasts on by, and I get so excited for our next guest. Whenever you watch the NASCAR Gander Mountain Truck Series, I can guarantee this next guest is somebody that you know, or, you know, when you're doing your picks for who's going to win the race, and I don't care whether it's a mile-and-a-half track or a short track or a super speedway, that number 98 Thor Sport Ford for champion always figures into the mix these days. He is Grand Enfinger. We got him on the hotline right now. What's going on there, Mr. Finger? How are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Hey, great to hear your voice. Man, I've missed you. missing the truck series like huge. If I'm missing it, I can't imagine what you guys are going through.
Yeah, we're definitely going a little stir crazy here. But hopefully we're about to get out of this mess pretty soon. I got a good feeling we're going to get back to the racetrack sooner rather than later. And sounds like our guys might be going back to the shop here in the next week or so. So, I think things are going the right direction.
You know, a little breather is sometimes good. But this has been, what now, six, seven weeks. It's got to be really, really tough on absolutely everybody. But you can bet the engineers at Thor Sport have been burning the midnight oil, saying, okay, now we've got some time here. What do you think? We try this, we try that. They've got to be working overtime trying to gain more advantages.
Simulators didn't get COVID, right? That's the the simulation programs, man. Everybody should be about 18 tenths quicker if the engineers are worth their weight in gold.
Now down here they did shut us off from going to like our Ford Performance Simulator, and they did shut down some of our engineering capabilities from a manufacturer's standpoint.
I gotcha.
To try to keep people from doing just that. Myself and Jeff Hensley had a lot of conversations. I know his wheels have been turning this whole time, and for the first couple 3 weeks, we were kind of going through different scenarios together on what we thought the schedule was going to be and what we were going to do with trucks and everything else. And then finally, we threw the towel in on that. So I know he's got some setup plans and stuff he's been thinking about, but we're really just kind of waiting on NASCAR to give us our final rundown of when exactly we're going to be racing and what tracks we're going to first. Like I said, Jeff Hensley's got some plans up his sleeve, I think, to make our Champion Power Equipment F-150 even better yet.
Now, Grant, you've got a lot more pictures on your Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that of you with a pressure washer instead of you with a simulation rig. You spending any time on iRacing? Spending much time on there? I haven't seen much at all. I've seen one picture of a 98 champion car, but are you doing much on there?
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit. Some guys at Thor Sport Racing. So actually, Ben Scrucci's Matt Norris. He's got like a little Wednesday night league that a lot of the guys in Thor Sport are running. So I've been doing that the last few weeks. Been running whatever I can here. When I have the opportunity. So yeah, I've had iRacing for a long time, but just haven't raced competitively with other guys until the last month or so since we've been in quarantine. So it's been a good time. I've been learning a lot, kind of reunited with some old racing buddies that I grew up racing with. So it's been a good time.
Do you think, Grant, you will see a difference between drivers that have utilize the iRacing on a fairly frequent basis, and maybe those drivers that have done nothing over the last 7 weeks? Do you think you'll see any difference? Would iRacing give you keep the edge on the knife, so to speak?
Man, I definitely think there's some benefits from iRacing. I feel like it can keep you sharp as a driver. You definitely have to be careful to not put all your eggs in that basket. It can develop some bad habits as well, in my opinion. But overall, yeah, I feel like it does help to keep sharp in a certain way. And you know, wherever that first race is for us, you know, I'll be definitely be making some extra laps there, because you know, our practice is very, very limited in the Truck Series anyway. We get roughly an hour and 15 minutes. And then we're ready to qualify and race. Well, coming out of this quarantine, it may be even more limited than that. So if you do get a few laps, you don't want to waste them by getting warmed up and shaking the rest off of you as a driver, that's for sure.
Now, Grant, you're not your background didn't come off of the dirt. So I wanted to ask you this question. The NASCAR Pinty Series, of course, has launched. They're going to race on dirt this year in 2020. Hopefully, you know, barring any circumstances with COVID, but they're planning on going to Ashwiken for the dirt for the first time in the heavy stock cars up here in Canada. For you as a driver, of course, you went down the ARCA chain and of course race at Eldora with the Truck Series. What would you expect rolling into a heavy stock car race for the first time on dirt with a bunch of guys that have never raced a heavy stock car on dirt?
I think you're going to see a lot of fun. I mean, it's definitely different. In my opinion, these big stock cars, whether it be an ARCA car or a truck, or I feel like a Penny's car would be in the same category. Not truly like a dirt car. It's not like a dirt late model or dirt modified. It doesn't drive the same, and it definitely doesn't drive the same as your asphalt cars. You know, it's kind of somewhere in between. It's kind of its own hybrid, so to speak. And it is a lot of fun. It's something you can't be worried about getting full throttle all the time, for sure. You know, it's just. Trying to optimize the grip you have, and really the aero doesn't matter very much. It's all about mechanical grip, and it's a lot of fun. I think you're going to see a good race.
That's the word that keeps on coming up, is the fun word.
What's going to be more fun? More fun for the driver or more fun for the fan? I kind of think the fan's going to be in for more fun. I think the drivers are going to need a bottle of Tylenol.
I think it'll be more fun for the driver. Still a lot of fun, but less fun for the fans, and the least amount of fun goes to the car owners. They will enjoy it the least.
Well, they're fiberglass bodies up here, so they're cheap.
Oh, yeah.
But it'll still take weeks to clean everything. It'll still be stuff getting destroyed, so I don't want you to go in there with too high of expectations.
You're going to want to make sure that you got the best Wix filter money can buy on that vehicle, right?
For sure, and you might need some squeegees inside there too. So the driver might have to clean his own windshield from the inside on this one.
Yeah, no kidding. It's going to be amazing, I can guarantee you. Grant Enfinger is who we've got on the other end of the hotline. He drives for Thor Sport in the Gander Mountain Truck Series, drives the number 98 for Champion Power Equipment. Grant, if you got your wish tonight on when the green flag is going to come out for the Truck Series, what track do you want to be at to go back to a green flag race condition?
You know, one of the tracks that I was really looking forward to racing this year, and it kind of got disrupted with all the COVID stuff, is Richmond. So that's a place I've never turned the lap around. It's a place I was really excited about going to. So I'd like that to be the first one up. I don't know if that's going to be the case. I don't know how all that's going to shake. They haven't called me to give my two cents, believe it or not, Joe. But yeah, I would definitely like to go to Richmond right off the bat.
And I guess the communication line really is Thor Sport to NASCAR, NASCAR to Thor Sport, and then Thor Sport to you drivers, right? That's how the communication link would work.
Yeah. Something like that.
Something.
I would have lost money for sure if somebody said, hey, I'll bet you $10 Grant Enfinger has never raced on Richmond. I would have said, okay, I'll take that bet.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised that you've never turned a lap.
I would have thought he won at that place before.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Man, I'm really looking forward to going there. I love Iowa, which is obviously similar configurations. feel like Richmond is maybe a little bit more abrasive from a tire standpoint than Iowa is. But man, that's one I've had circled on my calendar since the schedule came out last year. So I'm excited about getting some laps around there this year, whenever that might be.
You've been doing a dynamite job on your Twitter, my friend. I want to point that out. You can follow along with Grant Enfinger at Grant Enfinger on Twitter. I seen one on there where you were at a gas pump and you were given tips on fuel in the car. And I got to tell you, for a guy that drives a truck for a living and racing a car and doing all the stuff, you've been pretty creative with the stuff you're doing on Twitter. And I got to put it out to you, man. You're doing a good job.
Well, I appreciate that. It's a great way to keep everybody engaged, keep everybody knowing what's going on. And we've had a big push from our guys at Ford Performance and Ford Motor Company. They've done a lot to keep everything going and to keep our first responders healthy. And they've changed a lot of things to help them. So we've definitely been trying to make that push.
And with that Twitter account, I also know that you have got a pet named Wilbur. Tell us about Wilbur and how's he doing.
Wilbur is definitely the he has walked into our lives 6-7 months ago, I guess, and we haven't been the same since. So Wilbur is a potbelly pig that was with a few other ones that somehow made their way over towards our property and we have legally adopted him now. So We've made some adjustments around the house to make him comfortable, and that was some of my first projects there when this quarantine started. I put him in a little feeder system to where my neighbor didn't have to feed him every day when we were out of town, and put up a little camera system so we could keep our eye on him if we ever do go back out of town. We won't have to keep utilizing all the neighbors, because that's one of the things. You know, when you get a pig, you can't just take them to the kennel like you do your dog or your cat. It is a little bit more difficult than that. So we've been learning on the go here this year.
Now, was it Wilbur or was it your dog that had the cowboy hat on? Because that was hilarious.
That was Millie. So Millie was the star of that show. So we've definitely got our hands full. We've got some spoiled animals around the Enfinger household, that's for sure.
I can well imagine. Grant, this has been great catching up with you, man. I know we all look forward to you jumping back into that Ford Performance truck and flying around the racetracks and eventually flying right up here into Canada to CTMP for the Silverado 250 weekend. Just good on you, and be safe. And I can't wait to see you back in a truck, bud.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Stay tuned. I think we'll have some announcements on our schedule sooner rather than later. So we'll be back behind the Champion Power Equipment F-150 very, very soon, I think.
Sounds great. I can't wait for the day, Grant. You have a good night.
Thanks, guys.
You betcha, Grant Enfinger. He is chomping at the bit to get back to it.
Absolutely, and that's good news.
As all of them are.
You know, it's really interesting. Of course, NASCAR coming down and kind of announcing, you know, the outlook of the schedule, you know, as some of these states start to, you know, release the grasp a little bit on the restrictions and those types of things. I think the first, you know, a handful of races are going to be obviously without fans.
Maybe, yeah.
But
probably
it'll be fanless, but it'll be on TV, and that is a step in the right direction for sure. And I think it could be even good for the sport to have a few races that aren't with fans. I think it'll be the talk of the town. I know that it'll be definitely interesting on what it does TV number wise, and I think it's going to provide or turn or convert a bunch of new fans.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. You keep it glued right here to Racetime Radio. We'll get you the latest next Sunday night. Don't forget about our friends at SiriusXM NASCAR Radio over Channel 90. They'll also be right up to date as things break. You can bet that they're going to have it, but we'll also have the info for you right here on Racetime Radio. But that's going to do it for Junior and I here tonight in the RTR studio. Got to thank Susie Q right here for hooking us up with all of our guests, and we got to thank you for tuning in. You have a good, safe week, everybody. Remember that social distancing, This is all going to be behind us real soon. Have a good one, everybody. Be safe.
Thanks for listening to Racetime Radio. Visit us on the web at www.racetimeradio.com. Or leave a message on our 24-hour listener hotline, 1-888-5-RACETIME. That's 1-888-572-2384. We hope you'll join us again next time for more Racetime Radio.
Come on now, dig.
Exclusively on your home for the hardcore race fan.
Excellent, buddy, excellent.